This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Hi, everybody. It's Brian Greene from the Commercial Break Podcast. It's likely you've heard of the show if you're directly related to me or you follow our MySpace page. But I'm not here to talk to those three listeners. I'm here to appeal to people who haven't heard the show. Along with my co-host, Kristen Joy Hoadley, we're taking a deeper look at the topics that are affecting our youth today. Like, who are the people who are dating ghosts? Where did all these pickup artists come from? And why doesn't my preacher have a nicer private jet? We understand that these are the issues you really want to get to the bottom of. The Commercial Break is now available on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
All right, so the Rockets are back in action tonight against the Golden State Warriors. Down 1-0 in this series. I will. This is courtesy of Ben Dubose on Twitter.
Ben Dubose, who can get he is a fan, and he can get down in the doldrums as pessimistic as the rest of them.
Yep.
Or with the best of them, and yet he's got rays of sunshine for you.
Well, this is not a ray of sunshine here. This is.
I thought he was going to give us rays of sunshine.
No. Scary numbers.
Oh, you bastard.
Scary numbers.
All right.
Yeah, no, this is
on all back.
This is on brand for Ben Dubose.
Dang it. I got excited. I thought, if Ben is feeling optimistic about this, then, here we go.
No. These are scary numbers if you're bullish on the Rockets. And this may play into what you were saying in the previous segment, Seth. I mean, maybe we need a little Aaron Holiday in our lives. We got people texting in on the Jim Adler, the Texas Hammer text line. How about Reed Shepard for 10 or 12 minutes? Last I checked, he can knock down threes. But these are the stats. These are the numbers. Fred VanVleet, in five games against the Warriors this season, including game one, he's averaging 9 points on 22% shooting, 20% from three. In the context of what we're talking about, not a small sample size. Five games for your starting point guard. Yeah. Jalen Green. Again, these are the two guys we were pointing the finger at on Monday morning, and we weren't alone. Everybody was. Like, these two guys lost the game for you. Jalen Green, six games against Golden State this season, including game one. 11.7 points per game, 29.5% field goal, 21.4% on threes. That's abysmal, and that's averaged over the course of an entire season's worth of games against this team. Five games against Golden State for Fred VanVleet, and then Jalen played in every game, obviously. They played him five times in the regular season, and then again on Sunday. That's a little scary to me.
It's a little scary, and it especially speaks to, as annoying as it is, and as I feel nauseous even saying this, Steve Kerr and the Warriors are, especially in the playoffs, very good at game planning exactly what they need to do against you, specifically take away your greatest threat. And Jalen Green, even though he's not always the biggest threat on any given night, they know that if they really focus in and make Jalen Green as inefficient as possible, that there's a trickle-down effect to the rest of the squad.
Yeah.
Because you look at the rest of the team. Yeah, defensively, rebounding, everything else, the Rockets went according to plan and according to script. What works for them? All they needed was a credible performance. Not an incredible performance, a credible performance by Fred VanVleet and Jalen Green, and they didn't get it, and that's been, by and large, the history of them versus the Rockets this year, other than the one game.
Yeah, I guess if I'm trying to look at this and write it off in a way, I have a really hard time doing that. Let me just be clear. Like, writing this off is like, all right, well, that's the regular season, this is the postseason, but I'm going to try to do that, is that, okay, you are game planning way more specifically come postseason basketball than you are in the in the regular season. And this might be one of those things where having an extra day, you know, we've been like, okay, the Rockets have had a jillion back to backs. They've had this really weird schedule all year, and now all of a sudden, they didn't play an important game for 2 weeks. You play your important game on Sunday. You look like garbage offensively, and now you sit for three days. You know, once you factor in sitting around all day today until you play again, I don't know if you need extra time to figure stuff like this out. I'm just trying to draw some optimism here out of some numbers that really, really scare me about the rest of this series.
I would love for the conversation to be more nuanced than, hey, Fred VanVleet and Jalen Green got to play better than awful basketball players play. Yeah. Could you? But the sum total of it is just that.
Yeah.
And we're sitting here talking about whether Aaron Holiday can be an X factor in the game.
Yeah.
Because he can actually shoot. That's where we are with it. I saw multiple people complain about the long layoff during the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I'm looking at it at some point begging for Steven Adams to play 40 minutes. That's an exaggeration.
Yeah.
But I mean, Steven Adams is going to be a critical factor if you pull this series off, and as much rest as he can get between games. Yes, I am all for the long layoff between games as long as Steven Adams is going to be a crucial factor.
That's a good point. I saw, and you know, I know you and I have I think you and I feel similarly about Bill Simmons. You know, and kind of just his whole vibe. Undeniable, the business empire he's built. And some of his football thoughts in particular are way off target. He did bring up a point that I thought was very relevant for the Rockets game on Sunday, which is, and it plays into what you're talking about. You know, Steven Adams, to me, was the biggest difference maker in that game when he was in there. For the short spurt, comparatively, he played 20 minutes in that game. Obviously, the starters are all playing 32 to 40 minutes in that game. But Simmons said it, and as I'm listening to him, I'm like, yeah, it's probably true that when they took Steven Adams out of that game with about, you know, 6 or 7 minutes to go in the fourth quarter, Golden State was probably like, thank God. this guy was getting every rebound. He was and even the ones he wasn't getting, he was getting his hands on things. Like, that's what was keeping the Rockets in that game, is their ability to get second shots, and he's the best. He's the best guy on this team at doing that.
And especially, the you talk about just game planning for the team you're playing. The Warriors packed the paint to the point where people were wondering whether this was even a legal zone defense, because they packed the hell out of the paint. And that should, if you've got Steven Adams hoovering the ball down in that situation, mm-hmm. there should be opportunities on the perimeter. And there were opportunities on the perimeter.
Yep.
But then you got Fred VanVleet also jacking the ball up when there weren't opportunities on the perimeter.
Yeah.
The whole feel and flow of everything was just mucky and murky and ugly and wrong.
Fred VanVleet can't be the guy taking the most shots on the team. I don't even care if he's having a good night. Like, Fred VanVleet taking whatever it was, 17, 19 shots. I think he's 4 for 19, 2 for 13 from 3. Like, they took 29 three-pointers. Fred VanVleet's taking 13 of them. Like, what the hell is going on, you know?
Yeah, that's where I feel like, I mean, the strategy, if the strategy changes, if you just start rotating in guys like Aaron Holiday, Reed Shepard, whomever it might be, then at least you force the Warriors' hand and that they got to start defending the entire court better. Yeah. And then maybe Şengün goes off or what have you. It's just the way that if Fred VanVleet and Jalen Green are going to play the way they did, you're not going to beat a team like the Warriors.
Yeah.
It just, and they came close. I mean, they pushed it to a competitive game 5 times in that game, but you just got to get shooting out of somebody.
Well, and you get the silly turnovers need to stop. The bounce passes in traffic, the dribbling into traffic, the real turnovers and the de facto turnovers. The shot selection doesn't show up as a turnover on the box score. But Jalen Green, Ime Udoka made this point. He had one turnover in the box score, but the 15 field goal attempts he took, half of them is him just dribbling into traffic, hoping to draw a foul, or not realizing that there's three guys converging on him and that he's got outlets. And there's open guys. He's got to realize that. That's why I'm hoping, like, you get 2 days worth of being able to sit down and dissect your 15 field goal attempts in that game. And take a look around and look at the, you know, whatever the basketball equivalent is of the all 22, the all 10, and be able to see, like, you got that guy open, you got that guy open. Here's how they're defending you. And so it'll be interesting to see what the chess match is, the counter move for Ime Udoka in this game tonight. Will CJ Stroud be in attendance tonight? CJ Stroud was sitting second row the other night.
He was bad luck for the Rockets.
Yeah.
Can we pin that loss on C.J. Stroud sitting behind Tillman Fertitta at the game?
I'm not going to pin that loss on him, but if he's there tonight and they lose, it starts. Here was C.J. At his press conference the other day, talking about going to the Rockets game and the vibe at the Rockets game.
I'm excited to see them, you know, in this game too. But I definitely, just to see, you know, Houston live, like I remember my first playoff game here, you know, against the Browns was like cracking. It was like turning. It was like that in there. The crowd was just ready just to roll. And, you know, it takes time for young guys. And, you know, me being a young dude, you know, it's a different sport, but it's the same type of environment. It takes a little adjusting. The court look a little different. For us, the field looks different, the stands the lights a little brighter, and it just takes time to get it adjusted. The speed is a little more, and you know, you're playing against some of your childhood favorite players. Like for me, it was going against Myles Garrett and Denzel Ward. It's like, damn, I'm really going against some legends, and I gotta bring my A game. And I think for them, they'll slow down, they'll start to make their shots, and for them to only lose by 10, you know, and have a close game pretty much, come back from losing from 20, I know I'm sounding like an NBA coach or something, but for them to like, keep it that close and go, like, I think they were like 4 for like 20-something for shooting. Like, they'll find their shot, in my opinion. I think they'll be fine. And I think Jalen's gonna take over, and my man's gonna get warm. And, you know, Sengun, he nice. So I love the whole team. I love Fred nice. Like, I love Jabari. Like, they all are to me. So, yeah, I'm excited to watch.
Okay, so there you go. So there's CJ's breakdown of the game. Now, CJ went out and had literally the greatest game that a rookie quarterback has ever had in his first playoff game.
You know what, though? Okay, so when CJ said that, I thought, okay, look, Jalen Green's been in the league a while and now, and he's faced every legend of the NBA at one point in the regular season or whatever. That wow factor isn't quite the same as, I don't know, yeah, maybe seeing a menacing Myles Garrett staring down at you.
Yeah.
But CJ, even with playoff experience, started off really slow in the Chargers game this year.
Yeah, he did.
In the playoffs.
Yeah.
And it took that crazy throw, the fumble and scramble throw, kind of kicked him into gear.
Yeah, that's a great point.
Chargers game wasn't going well for CJ until that really weird play where it just kind of seemed to unlock something. Okay, so that'll be an analogy I can get with, is that Jalen Green just needs that moment that CJ had versus the Chargers where all of a sudden, okay, we're just playing basketball let the game come to me.
You and I made that analogy, I think, the Monday after that game, which is sometimes you got to see the ball go through the hoop. You know, and that's what it was for CJ. He was outstanding after that scramble drill play to Xavier Hutchinson. I do think too that, to me, as long as we're playing CJ and CJ's kind of, you know, CJ's drawing comparisons with what he looked at as a, you know, his first playoff game to what the young guys were looking at in that first playoff game for the Rockets, I think the biggest thing to bring up where the comparison falls apart a little bit is that pretty much every NFL regular season game has some element of a playoff feel to it. They're so important. Like, every game's important. Yeah. Every game's important. The NBA at large basically kind of almost ignores its regular season at this point compared to the NFL. So, you know, a guy like CJ's going into that playoff game against the Browns, and yeah, it's a little different. Yeah, the lights shine a little bit brighter, and there's a different logo on the field. And yeah, the stakes are higher. Obviously, your season's over if you lose. But the overall tenor of the game and the preparation is probably very similar, whereas this probably does feel very different for these young guys in a basketball playoff.
It is, yeah. They don't go throughout the regular season, even in the more high-profile games, they don't face the same level of possession-by-possession engagement.
Mm-hmm.
That the focus and the energy and everything just is way different in the NBA playoffs than it is in the regular season. I think it's funny that you said sometimes you just need to see the ball go in the hoop.
Yeah.
I think with Jalen Green, with him a little bit, it's got to be sometimes you just got to see the kick-out pass hit an open three.
Yes.
And that, all right, I'm driving. I'll kick it out. I'm good to go. I can do this. I don't have to see the ball go in the hoop. I gotta distribute the ball.
Yeah.
I gotta make the right decisions. I gotta not panic when I'm under when I'm being bracketed and what have you, and just see that the success on the assist side is almost more important, which is hard again when people are shooting 20% from the floor.
Right.
That's even when you make the right pass, it's not working out.
Well, Jabari, like I look at that, I'm looking at the box score again. Like, Jabari Smith taking 3 shots in that game and Fred VanVleet taking 19 is just, you know, not that Jabari is this volume score or anything, but Jabari can hit threes. Jabari can get at the rim. Jabari's developed a nice mid-range game. Like, it's just, yeah, man, it's not just on Jalen, it's on Fred too. Both these guys, at least one of them, has to play better in this game. If that's what they're going to be in this series, and again, the reason I bring that stat up, courtesy of Ben DuBose, is That's what they've been all year against Golden State, and that's a little bit scary tonight. It's on Ime Udoka and those guys themselves to find a way to unlock something against this Warriors defense, which
is really
good.
You know what they need,
Sean? What's that?
They need to bring in some ponytail Eastern philosophy type guru, like a Phil Jackson type. the concept of Wu Wei, which is where you just kind of let things come to you.
Is that what it's called?
Yeah, you're aligning yourself with the flow of things, and you don't try to force things. At some point, if you start to learn about Eastern philosophy, some white dude in a ponytail is going to...
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Tell you a story about a farmer and his horse and act like he made it up, okay?
Okay.
I'm just warning everybody right now.
All right.
So he'll talk to you about Wu Wei. That's what they need. They need Phil Jackson to come in and give a speech about Wu Wei.
Okay.
Yeah.
We need to go on LinkedIn today and search hipster. There's got to be some hipster on there that's looking for some contract work.
Honestly, you know, I like learning about all the world religions and everything.
I know.
The one thing I've learned about the Eastern religions is, man, there's all these American dudes that want to be gurus. They love to take these 6,000-year-old proverbs and parables and act like they made the story up themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And then women sleep with them because of it.
Oh,
they're
yeah.
like, "Oh, he's so deep."
Yeah.
He's just he recites these things he saw on YouTube so effortlessly. Yeah.
Yeah. Are you describing these people with reverence or with disgust right now? Because it sounds like they got some pretty good game.
It's the same. It's the guy. It's a, in previous generations, it was the guy on campus playing the guitar under an oak tree.
Or the creepy professor playing the guitar under the oak tree.
Like
Donald Sutherland in Animal House.
Let's go. Let's have class outside today.
Right.
And I'll say deep things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And
yep.
We'll go talk about the universe.
Some sad news yesterday as we shift gears here, Payne and Pendergast, in the world of sports broadcasting-wise. Mike Patrick, who has a tie to Texans history, which we will hear in a second, play-by-play guy on ESPN, was a Sunday Night Football play-by-play guy for years before the Sunday Night Football moved over to NBC. Mike Patrick passes away yesterday at the age of 80 from natural causes. Underrated announcer. This happens, Seth, when people in broadcasting, when they pass away, people start posting their favorite, you know, this was the greatest call he had. This is the most memorable call. Probably the most memorable call, the one I saw the most. If Twitter is any sort of referendum on which call he's most famous for, it was probably this for Mike Patrick from ESPN.
Dyson and Bird are deep. Taken by Neal. He gives it to Wycheck. Wycheck. That looked like a forward pass taken by Dyson. Dyson down the sideline. Dyson's going to go all the way. And there is no flag. There are no flags on the play. It is a touchdown, but we need to look at that replay. All that's missing is the band. That's right. That's the only thing missing.
Okay, so that was Joe Theismann on the call with Mike Patrick there. That was a Music City Miracle. That's got to be one of those plays when you're a play-by-play guy where you're like, my voice is going to be on this forever. Like, we just saw an historic play right there.
Yeah, and Mike Patrick, actually, some very poignant moments personally with him because, well, the Music City Miracle was poignant because that was in the 1999 season. I was playing on a Jaguars team who had only lost to the Tennessee Titans
that
year. We had a dominant offense. We had a really, really good defense. It faltered a little bit towards the end of the season. But we went 14-2 in the regular season. We had only lost to the Titans. The Titans had our number. They had Mark Brunell's number. And I am still convinced to this day that if we had faced anybody but the Titans the next week after the Music City Miracle, that we would have been in the Super Bowl.
Playing the Rams. No. Jacksonville against the St. Louis Rams in the Super Bowl. So that play indirectly cost Seth Payne a shot at a Super Bowl. Now, this is a little more direct right here for Texan fans. And if you're a Texan fan, and we love Mark Vandermeer on the radio, obviously, and his call of all these things. The TV feed that night on the inaugural Houston Texans game, Sunday Night Football 2002, was Mike Patrick, who was the TV voice on the first ever Texans touchdown.
Cowboys come with four, Carr with time. Complete down to the five, diving for the end zone, touchdown, Billy Miller! Are you kidding me?
All right, so that was
Billy. Was a great touchdown, too, because Billy had to stretch out for it.
Yeah.
It was the fact that we had scored a touchdown at all. That was a much bigger moment, and Mike Patrick knew and understood that, given what extreme underdogs we were going into that game. And Billy Miller made a really gutsy final push to
lunge.
Get into the end zone.
Into the end zone. Here's
Good
one
job,
more.
Mike Patrick.
Here's one more from that game. You guys remember this? Up 17-10, Cowboys got the ball deep in their own territory, fourth quarter.
Football's like real estate. Location, location, location. Carter under pressure. Safety. They got him. It's a safety.
That ought to do it.
Seth Payne and Gary Walker. Hats off to that defense.
I got chill bumps on that one right there.
Hats off to that defense. That's right, Mike Patrick.
Dude, look at it. I got chill bumps on that right there.
I hadn't heard his call on it in a long time because I hear Mark's all the time, and Mark's was equally brilliant.
Yep.
But, thank you, Mike Patrick. It was a great moment. Did you hear how loud that was?
Yes.
That was so loud.
Man, play that one bit. Yeah, no, that jumped out at me, too.
It was so loud, Sean.
That popped on TV on the YouTube. I mean, obviously on YouTube is where I was watching this last night. Play that one more time.
Football's like real estate. Location, location, location. Carter under pressure. They got him.
That ought to do it.
Seth Payne and Gary Walker. Hats off to that defense.
I'll
tell you what, man. Do you talk about the appropriate energy at the moment and how sometimes we get upset with some of these broadcasters and almost act like they're at a golf tournament or something? On the eighth hole. It was so loud, Sean.
Yeah.
I've never experienced loudness like that.
That's the loudest.
And I stood next to jet engines.
That's the loudest crowd you've ever played in front of?
In that moment especially, it was so loud. I don't know if I even knew what the exact call was on that play. We were running a game, and
game. I was honed in on you on that play.
Yeah.
And you were over the nose right there, and there was some clutter in front of you.
Defensive end come inside, and I looped around.
You looped around to the right, and you were moving good too, man. I was impressed.
I was deceptively fast.
Good straight line speed. I'm not just blowing smoke, man.
My measurables, damn it.
Yeah.
Mike Patrick could tell you that.
I love that Gary Walker got up and flexed after it.
Yeah.
You were busy getting scooped up by somebody.
I didn't know I had made the play. Yeah. I had zero memory of that, actually. I remember before the play just being exhausted and kind of getting the call and lining up, but I have zero memory of the actual on-field play.
Yeah.
I was in that unconscious moment. I came to the sideline, and Corey Sears told me, I asked Corey Sears who made the play, and he was like, "You did."
Yeah, Sears was telling you that you wow, who made that? You.
yeah. It was cool. All I was right. Like, oh, swell.
Jim Adler, the Texan. I love that call. I was very excited to play that this morning. Someone is saying on the text page, and we're Mike Patrick, play-by-play guy for ESPN, passes away at the age of 80. If you're just getting in your car, he was on the TV call for the very first ever Houston Texans game against the Cowboys back in 2002. Someone's texting in on the Jim Adler Texas Hammer text line. How about the Britney Spears comment? We've got that for you. We've got that for you right here just to set the stage. This is, I forget what year it was, 2007, I think. And Georgia has the ball late in the game coming out of a timeout, getting ready to beat Alabama by a field goal. That must have been Nick Saban's first year. I mean, there's 20 seconds left in the game. It's Mike Patrick and Todd Blackledge on the call. and they're coming out of a timeout off the sidelines. And out of nowhere, this.
I have an important question.
Go ahead.
What is Brittany doing with her life?
Who?
Brittany.
Brittany who?
Spears. What is she doing with her career?
Why do we care at this point? Is she here?
I don't think so.
Is she a football fan?
Oh, I'm sure she is.
Blackledge is trying, like, in the moment, but you can hear they're coming back onto the field because the crowd is starting to amp up. And in the moment, Blackledge is like, why are we talking about this?
There was a little bit of like a Kevin Harlan element to him. Where just, you know, Kevin Harlan can just go anywhere and
get away
and
with it. Just,
yeah. Well, and also, you know, obviously a very prescient. You know, he understood that Brittany was in for an interesting decade.
She was in a bad place.
whatever she was doing at that time.
Yeah, man.
That was her that dirtbag looking ex husband of hers.
Kevin Federline. Yeah.
Yeah. Here she and Kevin Federline were having some issues. Yeah.
I got one more here from Mike Patrick. We're getting a lot of people texting in now about that Cowboys game in 2002. I was there. It was absolutely electric and awesome, especially because I hate the Cowboys. That's a text. I was there for
nuts.
That game. One of my greatest sports memories. I'm here for Remember When talk today.
Mark and John did an interview with me on Texans Radio last week, and it honestly and maybe it was because Vandermeer was there too, and I was talking to him about it. I've done multiple interviews about that moment, and I all of a sudden I was kind of seized up with emotion about it because, well, like all of our listeners texting in, there's just no way to explain it to somebody who wasn't from Houston, and especially the fans. We as players, by and large, you know, we had no, you know, we knew about the Oilers leaving and everything, but just even in the time we had been there over several months, you would hear it from the fans about the whole ordeal. They would tell us about their hatred for the Cowboys. They would tell us how they only want us to beat the Cowboys that year, and that's all that matters. And it just, it was so unique. Mm. And it still is. It's just, I'm so grateful that I got to be a part of it because it was just so. It was such an incredible and unique energy that you really can't explain. It was really, really cool. For the first game of the regular season in an NFL season, it was just as packed with emotion as any other game I've ever played in football.
Unless they add expansion franchises to the NFL, it's an irreplicable moment.
Yeah,
you know,
it's
not just the first game of a season. That's the first game for a team. Like,
right.
You know, and against an in-state rival. And you laying out just what all the talk was leading up to. It was probably a topic every day on this station was the lead up to that season, you know?
Yeah, and it was. And it was, if you're from outside Houston, you probably think, like, why are they making such a big deal out of this? I don't know, man. It was just different, all right?
Look at the crowd.
Get off my back!
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that. This was an interesting one, too. This is the last one we'll play from Mike Patrick here. I'm enjoying the trip down memory lane. He was the first person, the first game ever that had the yellow first down line was an ESPN Sunday night game. It was a Sunday night game in 1998.
Oh, my gosh.
With the Baltimore Ravens, and I forget who the other team was. But this was Mike Patrick at the outset of the broadcast explaining this new feature that they were going to have on their broadcast that night.
Welcome back to Baltimore. To help you better enjoy our Sunday night coverage, ESPN unveils its latest technical innovation on tonight's game. It's ESPN's first and 10. The gold-colored line you'll see appears to be painted on the field, but it's really being electronically generated by us. It's a visual reference for you to always know the yard line an offense has to reach for a first down. While it is accurate to 1/10 of a yard, it won't be used to question officials' marks or measurements. It is purely to help you enjoy and understand the game.
It's awesome. Dude, that sounds like somebody explaining email to somebody in like 1991 or something. You know what I mean? Like, you no longer have to put a stamp on a letter and send it to your mom. If she has her first initial and last name at some sort of internet outlet, fellas, the internet is this big web of data transmission. You can actually communicate with her almost instantly via email. Yeah.
You know what, Nia? He did the thing that people would do for, it felt like a full decade. Kids, you wouldn't understand that almost every time at the beginning of every broadcast or in critical moments on the field, they would remind you of two things. One, the players don't actually see the yellow line on the field, and two, that's not the official line. So that... It was hilarious. So I mean, it was something they had to explain. But somewhere along the way, they stopped explaining that part
of
it.
Yeah, people got it at that
point.
I'd like
to have somebody go do your Google word search and phraseology. Right. Or like at some point, they stopped saying as much. Now they can't actually see the line on the field. I do wonder, this year, now that they're doing it electronically, maybe the yellow line will be... At the very least, for viewing purposes, maybe it's a lot closer to the actual line.
It's
and
tied to it. Yeah. For those who don't know, they're going to be the first downs are going to be decided electronically this year. The chain gang is second string. I guess they're a tiebreaker.
They're there as a backup. Yeah. Well, if for some reason the system goes down or something.
That feels to me like an invention that right from the shoot, people were like, this is. I thought it was, I'm like, this is incredible.
I thought, I can't imagine watching football without it.
Right,
now.
Right.
Like I watch high school games sometimes, and I'm like, oh.
Well, dude, I mean, exactly. No replay, no yellow line, right? Where's the scores of the other games? How many timeouts do they have left? It's funny to go back and watch games, even games from like the early 90s. Like the advancements that got made in the broadcast. Like to go back, like I go back and watch that Catholics versus Convicts game a lot in 1988, Notre Dame and Miami, because I was there. It was the greatest sporting event still to this day that I've ever been to. But you go back and watch it, and it's a very tough watch, not just because the definition of the actual quality of the video is not very good. You know, it's a square box with very grainy, by our standards today, grainy video. But there's no little score widget on the screen. You have no idea how much time is left. There's nothing about a play clock on the screen. I have no idea how far it is to go for a first down unless they show 3rd and 9 for like 2 seconds and then take it off the screen. It's, what took so long to get all these advancements in the
The one time it's relevant where you do still have to remind yourself that the players can't see the line on the field is that when there are those moments where the player might – make some kind of move right before or not. And you're like, how can you not? It's right there in front of you. Yeah. And then you realize, oh, he'd already broken 4 tackles and he probably doesn't know exactly where the first down marker is.
Man. I'm ready.
Sean, let's be real though. Yeah. If I do a deep search, if I go do an advanced search, I'm going to find a bunch of put out old folks in 1998. They were adamantly against the yellow line.
100%.
Okay. Probably the score bug too.
The score bug
wasn't a thing, kids.
The score
you
bug.
Didn't, at various times, or for a long, long stretch of sports history, you had to actually really pay attention to what the score was.
Yes.
Because you didn't know what it was except for every now, like at the beginning of a segment or after every few plays, they might remind you of it.
Didn't know. Let's see, text message. Jim Adler, the Texas Hammer text line. Seth, beating the Cowboys made you a Texan for life. We will forever love you all for that game. I like that. Seth and company coming in on the text page.
It's always nice to do one thing in your life that somehow gets
memorable. That's a pretty damn good one, man.
Yeah.
It's a pretty damn good one. Would I trade my 5 smack-off titles for a safety in the Cowboys game? I think I might. That would be a bad trade by you. I love my smack-off titles. That's safety in the Cowboys game, man. That's
it was cool, you know. And the cool thing was that I ended up getting the full sack officially. But I got there like a 16th of a second ahead of Gary.
Yeah.
But Gary and I had played 3 years together in Jacksonville, and we came over together. So we were there for the majority of my NFL career. Gary Walker was playing next to me on the on the defensive line. So it was really cool that Gary and I were both a part of that play. Although he did deeply resent me for several years afterwards about not getting half that sack.
That's what I was going to ask you. How many years did it take him to get over? That
I mean, he seethed about it for a while. We joked about it when we had Gary Walker on the pregame.
He was awesome.
We actually got into a little bit of an argument about it before this year. So yeah. Oh no, that's class. No, at some point 30 years from now, Gary and I will be old men sitting on a porch somewhere, like. Viciously arguing about the
safety. Yeah, that's fantastic. People texting, man, I'm ready for some football. Yeah, if those audio clips don't get you fired up for football, draft is tomorrow. Somebody texting, y'all know the draft starts tomorrow, right? Yeah, we do. We're gonna do the mock draft injection in the next segment.
Nah.
Don't worry.
We've already talked. Half our content this morning has been about the draft.
Has been about the draft. Yeah. So apologies if you're just getting in your car and you're dipping in on memory lane, but. That was fun for me. I liked. I enjoyed that very, very much. 713-572-4610 If you if you want to get in. So draft tomorrow. Texans still sitting at 25 right now. Somebody asked me last night, what's the over-under on the number of trades you think Nick ends up making over the course of the next 3 days within the draft? I put the number, Seth, at 3.5. Would you go over or under 3.5?
What's his average?
Well, some years where they have had 11 and 12 picks, he's traded 7 or 8 times.
Yeah.
And then in the other draft, you know, there's only so many opportunities to trade when you have 7 picks. But most of the picks he's made, he's moved either up or down to get to that spot.
I'm starting to get and maybe I'm just falling victim to all of the scuttlebutt and all the speculation.
Yeah.
But it feels like enough plugged in national reporter types have started to hint at an aggressive Texans trade.
Yeah.
I would take the under because I think that if he's going to make an aggressive trade, he's going to use up some of that capital right quick. Yeah.
He's going to have fewer picks. That would be my advice to people at the draft party is keep your head on a swivel. There's a tendency at the draft party to, when the Texans aren't picking, to just be doing, no, go have fun, do your thing, but keep an eye on those screens, man.
Well, and one thing we want to do just for our viewing enjoyment, for tomorrow, I'm going to have a list of the names to really, really watch during the draft. Just from all the guys that have been, it either makes sense or there's been heavy linkage of some of the prospects to the Texans.
These are
the guys you can really zero in on and think like, oh, okay, oh, this guy's gone, this guy's gone. With some of these offensive linemen, as they start to disappear, the guys that you figure, like, that people have said or had reports that the Texans really like Kelvin Banks.
Yeah, yeah.
Once a couple of those guys are gone, the chance of an aggressive trade really starts amping up.
Casual viewer's guide to the 2025 NFL draft. Casual Texans viewer's guide. Yeah, like the
hardcore but drunk.
But
just keep it simple.
Casual brain.
So you can just still kind of pay attention.
Yeah. Seth and Gary Walker in 35 years will be arguing like a couple old men in the barbershop about that play.
Oh no, that was what I heard Jason. Gary and I were arguing about something during stretch one day at practice, and somebody said man, y'all are like some old married couple who sleeps in separate bedrooms. Like you're never gonna get divorced, but you hate each other.
But you seem
married, separate bedrooms.
You seem to look back at it very, very fondly.
No. Gary and I always knew that. It was almost like a movie. It was like a cop buddy movie where we just butted heads all the time, but ultimately we knew we were the best partner for the other one.
I love that. All right. Someone saying you got to start having Remember When Wednesday as a segment. I enjoyed that. That was fun. All right. Mock draft injection time.
And we should do the safety every week.
Every week.
Just do the exact same. We get to the point our program director is having conversations with you on the side, and you're like, I know, Parker, but like, Seth insists on reliving the safety.
He really loves
every
that
week.
Play. He loves hearing Mike Patrick say his name.
This was Sean's idea, everybody. This was not fueled by me.
RIP. The overall overriding thing with this segment was RIP Mike Patrick. I think very underrated as a play-by-play guy. Really, really good. Peter Schrager, who is now with ESPN.com. It's still very weird to see him on ESPN. He's got a mock draft based on information he is hearing out in his Nugget Hussy network. Yes.
He's plugged in.
Yeah, he's plugged in. Peter
Schrager. Very plugged in.
So he's got a mock draft. Who does he have the Texans taking based on his plugged in-itness? We will have that for you. Mock draft injection is next. All right, we're going to get to Peter Schrager's mock draft here in just a second. Peter Schrager, who's now with ESPN. Formerly of NFL Network, he's been with ESPN for like 2 weeks. He's all over the place on there. He does a good job.
What's going on NFL Network? It's just, it was like a purge, but then aren't they ultimately, NFL Network is going to basically turn everything over to ESPN.
That's been a talk for it. One of them's acquiring the other, and I can never remember which it is. I think it's ESPN acquiring the NFL Network, but it's been talked about for like 2 years, and it still hasn't happened yet. So We'll get to Peter Schrager's mock draft here. I got to read this text to you, Seth. On the heels, if you missed a previous segment, we were paying tribute to Mike Patrick, the ESPN play-by-play announcer, largely football throughout his career, probably most famous for being Sunday Night Football for 16 years on ESPN. He was the play-by-play voice, including the Texans-Cowboys game in 2002, in which a safety by Seth C. Payne sealed the deal in that game. Longtime Texan fans remember that. Text message. How does it feel to have the greatest defensive play in Texans history ripped away from you by J.J. Watt?
Yeah.
Right? Probably the pick six, I'm assuming, yeah, is what they're talking about.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I would see, just by sheer probability, JJ was going to do it at some point.
That's a great point, yes.
That and by virtue of it, I wouldn't have predicted at the time that the Texans wouldn't become a real NFL team for 10 years.
Yeah.
So it was, that was about it. 2011 mm-hmm. Was when you felt like, oh, okay, wait a second. This is a real NFL team.
Yes.
So that's what I was surprised. I wouldn't be surprised that JJ Watt did it. I would be surprised that because we made steady progress those first 3 years.
That's true.
Then we had a huge, huge setback, but we had scrapped our way to being a 500 team, mm-hmm. and then all of a sudden, boom, 2-14. So, that's cool. I'm cool. I can. There's enough room for JJ and me.
Answer the question, Seth. How does it feel?
On the Mount Rushmore of best defensive players ever. I can share some room with JJ.
Okay, good.
We'll carve out spots for a fifth player.
There you
go.
That's it. Yeah. That's it. All right. Let's do the Mazik. I love that text. That's a great text. Let's do the mock draft here. Peter Schrager. We've never done a Peter Schrager mock draft before. That's right. Great job, Ben Gary. Great job by you.
Creepy Schrager is the best Schrager.
Hit it one more time. They are still
the Texans to come deliver my newspaper and collect payment.
Just picturing him in an ice cream truck delivering that quote. Picture Peter Schrager in an ice cream truck saying this. Yeah, no disrespect to ice cream truck drivers out there. All right, so he's got a mock draft for the Texans. So let's do this here. This with the 25th overall pick. In the Peter Schrager ESPN.com mock draft, the Houston Texans select Donovan Jackson, guard, Ohio State, and I will add, native Houstonian, a graduate of Episcopal High School, couple miles from NRG Stadium. And Peter Schrager says this, the Texans could look to their offensive line and add a guard who has the potential to kick outside to tackle. They're rebuilding their protection in front of quarterback C.J. Stroud. This isn't an attention-grabbing pick, but it's a sensible one in this draft.
Yeah, and Donovan Jackson, it's weird because you see him listed as a tackle on a lot of the different rankings when you go to look for the top-rated tackles or guards. So he's all over the place, and I think in a lot of people's minds, that's almost kind of changed what his value should be. Because if you're looking at him as a tackle, he's not ranked nearly as high as if you're looking at him as a guard. Mm-hmm. And I think most teams are probably looking at him as a guard. But he kicked out and had to play tackle because of a couple injuries at Ohio State this year. And he did a lot better than people would have anticipated. The first thing people will bring up with a negative about Donovan Jackson will sometimes be, he had a really tough game against Abdul Carter. If I remember correctly, I think that was his first game at offensive tackle. So I don't really put that much into it, especially because I'm looking at him as a guard.
Mm-hmm.
The guys like Daniel Jeremiah and Lance Zierlein, I think that they've all said that most teams are looking at him as a guard. So I would 100% be cool with this. I think the CJ Stroud teammate stuff is starting to lose a little bit of its luster now. CJ's been gone for 3 years now.
Yeah.
I think it's more that he comes from a team with a really good offense. He's produced at a high level for a long time. He's shown that willingness and ability to play on the perimeter, which I don't think proves that he can play tackle, but I think that he maybe got to display a little bit more athleticism than you can show at guard. So I'd be really happy with Donovan Jackson.
Did he bump outside? Was it when Simmons suffered the knee injury that he had to move to tackle?
Simmons got hurt, then there was a replacement, and then Donovan Jackson.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
If I remember correctly.
So they were down to their third solution there at tackle. Okay, gotcha. So Donovan Jackson, and we had the Albert Breer report earlier. We should touch on it again here. Albert Breer in his Tuesday column, his Empty the Notebook column that a lot of these insiders are doing over these next couple days, said that the Texans are, quote, sniffing around at trading up in the draft. The belief is that it's for an offensive lineman. The belief, Breer says also, is that by the time pick 10 rolls around, Will Campbell, Armon Membu, and Kelvin Banks are all going to be gone. So it could be a trade up, maybe a small trade up for somebody like Gray Zabal, or maybe an aggressive trade up if one of those other three guys I'm talking about slips. But he did mention too, Seth, in that the Texans are doing a lot of research on Donovan Jackson.
And I wonder, this is a weird year where I think a lot of offensive linemen or offensive tackles are expected to go early, yet at the same time, it's not like they're all classically, oh yeah, this guy is a top 10 pick at
right.
So I think there's a chance that some of those guys could fall, just because right now during mock draft season, people are looking at teams and their needs and assuming that nobody ever wants to believe the GMs that say they take best player available. I think that they assume teams are going to reach for some of these guys. I think personally, I think there's a better chance that Kelvin Banks is available past pick 15. And if the Texans really like him, maybe they don't have to, but they want to trade up for him. It doesn't necessarily have to be a super, super aggressive trade.
Let me ask you this about another team in the AFC South, because we're seeing more and more of this rumor now. And Schrager, who you and I both agree is pretty plugged in as far as, you know, the guys that put out mock drafts, and his is based on, Peter Schrager's is not based on what he thinks teams should do. He's making it very clear. This is based on things that he is hearing, the scuttlebutt. We know it's lying season two, so we acknowledge that. But I've seen this a lot with folks lately, Seth, and it's relevant to the Texans because it's in the division. How would you feel if Jacksonville, with the fifth pick, drafted Ashton Jeanty, the running back out of Boise State? That's who Schrager, he's among many who have the Jaguars kind of swerving from Mason Graham, the defensive tackle out of Michigan, and taking Ashton Jeanty, the running back out of Boise State.
Well, look, the Jaguars have already demonstrated that by far the wisest move is to draft a running back in the first round to help out Trevor Lawrence, right? Is that not correct?
Etienne,
No, and before him, the same year.
They drafted Leonard Fournette back in 2017 to help Bortles.
That was to help Bortles.
Yeah, yeah.
And then Etienne is to help Trevor Lawrence.
Same draft class as Lawrence, yeah.
So now you can also draft another running back to help Trevor Lawrence.
Right.
Yeah. Now, it's a completely different coaching staff, different GM. That would make me a little bit nervous. I think Ashton.
Jeanty's good. He's a good
Jeanty's
player.
It's a really good running backs draft. Yeah. And it's also a year where, you know, it's a copycat league, and the trends swing, and running backs aren't that valuable anymore. Now teams have seen two teams spend on free agent running backs with the Ravens and the Eagles with great success.
Yep.
And I think the pendulum probably swings back to where there's not a chance in hell that Ashton Jeanty is going to be available there at that point. But I think there's a chance that some notable running backs, I don't think all four running backs are going to get drafted. It would be it's a big, bold move if four running backs go in the first round.
Yeah.
There are four guys capable of it, I think. But I'd be surprised if the Texans took a running back.
I would too. Oh, in the first round for sure. Now, if it's, that would be a fascinating reaction to see.
This one didn't, if I remember correctly, I think right before the Texans, Omarion Hampton goes to the Vikings right before the Texans.
And he's a good player. Like, he's somebody, you might get upset they're drafting a running back, and then they'd show his sizzle reel, and you'd be like, okay, well, him in the backfield, maybe put him and Mixon back there together with CJ, you do some things, put two running backs back there, that's your third down back, that kind of thing. I could see that. Guys with the ball in their hands, it's easy to get excited when you look at their highlight reel right after you draft them.
The best. Yeah, running backs are the best.
Yeah.
Every single running back the Texans have ever drafted, I have fallen in love with every single one of those running backs.
Golden falls to Green Bay in this draft to 23, two picks before the Texans. So the two picks before the Texans are very dynamic offensive weapons. Golden at 23 and Omarion Hampton at 24. That's interesting. So Donovan Jackson at 25. To the Texans, according to Peter Schrager of ESPN.com. All right, into the 8 o'clock hour we go. Payne and Pendergast. All right, let's hear from one of the newest Houston Texans, C.J. Gardner-Johnson. I get a Jimmy Ward vibe off of C.J. Gardner-Johnson, and I mean that in a very, very positive way. What's he learned so far from D'Amico Ryans? What's the mentality he's bringing to this team? He also talks a little bit about C.J. Stroud. We'll get to all of that coming up in the next segment.